"A pox upon Namur, if he has done this," cried Zatula. "For what harm have I ever done him? Verily, I shall set my heel on the dog's neck, and the torture wheel shall serve him, even as these horses from hell have served my blood-red lilies of Sothar, and my vein-colored irises from Nayat, and my orchids from Eukosthrog, which were purple as the bruises of love. Yea, though he stand the viceroy of Phacedon before earth, and overlord of 10,000 devils, my wheel shall break him, and fire shall heat the wheel white hot in its turning, till he withers black as the seared blossoms." Thus did Zotella make his brag, but he issued no orders for the execution of his threat, and no man stirred from the palace towards Namura's house. And from the portals of the wizard none came forth, or if any came, there was no visible sign or sound. So the day went over, and the night rose, bringing later a moon that was slightly darkened at the rim. And the night was silent, and Zotula, sitting long at the banquet table, drained his wine cup often and wrathfully, muttering new threats against Namura. And the night wore on, and it seemed that the visitation would not be repeated. But at midnight, lying in his chamber with Obexa, and fathom deep in his slumber from the wine, Zotella was awakened by a monstrous clangor of hoofs that raced and capered in the palace porticos and in the long balconies. All night the hoofs thundered back and forth, echoing awfully in the vaulted stone, while Zotella and Obexa listened, huddled close amid their cushions and coverlets. And all the occupants of the palace, wakeful and fearful, heard the noise, but stirred not from their chambers. A little before dawn, the hooves departed suddenly, and afterward, by day, their marks were found on the marble flags of the porches and balconies, and the marks were countless, deep graven, and black as if branded there by flame. Like mottled marble were the emperor's cheeks when he saw the hoof-printed floors, and terror stayed with him henceforth, following him to the depths of his embriety, since he knew not where the haunting would cease. His women murmured, and some wished to flee from Eumaeus, and it seemed that the revels of the day and evening were shadowed by ill wings that left their umbrage in the yellow wine and bedimmed the augurate lamps. And again, toward midnight, the slumber of Zotella was broken by the hooves, which came galloping and pacing on the palace roof and through all the corridors and the halls. Thereafter, till dawn, the hooves filled the palace with their iron clatterings, and they rung hollowly on the topmost domes, as if the coursers of gods had trodden there, passing from heaven to heaven in tumultuous cavalcade. Zotella and Obexa, lying together while the terrible hooves went to and fro in the hall outside their chamber, had no heart or thought for sin, nor could they find any comfort in their nearness. In the gray hour before dawn, they heard a great thundering high on the barred brazen door of the room, as if some mighty stallion, rearing, had drummed there with his forefeet. And soon after this, the hooves went away, leaving a silence like an interlude in some gathering storm of doom. Later, the marks of the hooves were found everywhere in the halls, marring the bright mosaics. Black holes were burnt in the gold-threaded rugs, and the rugs of silver and scarlet, and the high white domes were pitted poxwise with the marks. And far up on the brazen door of Zotella's chamber, the prints of a horse's forefeet were incised deeply. Now, in Eumaeus and throughout Xylac, the tale of this haunting became known, and the thing was deemed an ominous prodigy, though people differed in their interpretations. Some held that the sending came from Nomura, and was meant as a token of his supremacy above all kings and emperors. And some thought that it came from a new wizard who had risen in Tinnerath, far to the east, and who wished to supplant Nomura. And the priests of the god of Xylac held that their various deities had dispatched the haunting, as a sign that more sacrifices were required in the temples. Then, in his hall of audience, whose floor of zard and jasper had been grievously pocked by the unseen hooves, Zotella called together many priests and magicians and soothsayers, and asked them to declare the cause of the sending, and devise a mode of exorcism. But, seeing that there was no agreement among them, Zotella provided the several priestly sects with the wherewithal of sacrifice to their sundry gods, and sent them away. And the wizards and prophets, under threat of decapitation if they refused, were enjoined to visit Nomura in his mansion of sorcery, and learn his will, if haply the sending was his, and not the work of another. Loth were the wizards and soothsayers, fearing Nomura, and caring not to intrude upon the frightful mysteries of his obscure mansion. But the swordsmen of the emperor drove them forth, lifting great crescent blades against them when they tarried. So one by one, in a straggling order, the delegation went towards Nomura's portals, and vanished into the devil-builded house. Pale, muttering, and distraught, like men who have looked upon hell and have seen their doom, they returned before sunset to the emperor. And they said that Nomura had received them courteously, and had sent them back with this message: "Be it known to Zotella that the haunting is a sign of that which he has long forgotten, and the reason of the haunting will be revealed to him at the hour prepared and set apart by destiny. And the hour draws near, for Nomura bids the emperor and all his court to a great feast on the afternoon of the morrow." Having delivered this message, to the wonder and consternation of Zotella, the delegation begged his leave to depart. And though the emperor questioned them minutely, they seemed unwilling to relate the circumstances of the visit to Nomura, nor would they describe the sorcerer's fabled house, except in a vague manner, each contradicting the other as to what he had seen. So, after a little, Zotella bade them go, and when they had gone, he sat musing for a long while on the invitation of Nomura, which was a thing he cared not to accept, but feared to decline. That evening he drank even more liberally than was his wont, and he slept a Lethean slumber, nor was there any noise of trampling hoofs about the palace to awaken him. And silently, during the night, the prophets and magicians passed like furtive shadows from Eumaeus, and no man saw them depart, and at morning they were gone from Xylac into other lands, never to return. Now on that same evening, in the great hall of his house, Nomura sat alone, having dismissed the familiars who attended him ordinarily. Before him, on an altar of jet, was the dark, gigantic statue of Thasadon, which a devil-begotten sculptor had wrought in ancient days for an evil king of Tassoon, called Fernok. The archdemon was depicted in the guise of a full-armored warrior, lifting a spiky mace as if in heroic battle. Long had the statue lain in the desert-sunken palace of Fernok, whose very site was disputed by the nomads. And Nomura, by his divination, had found it, and had reared up the infernal image, to abide with him always thereafter. And often, through the mouth of the statue, Thasadon would utter oracles to Nomura, or would answer interrogations. Before the black armored image, there hung 7 silver lamps, wrought in the form of horses' skulls, with flames issuing changeably in blue and purple and crimson from their eye sockets. Wild and lurid was their light, and the face of the demon peering from under his crested helmet was filled with malign, equivocal shadows that shifted and changed eternally. And sitting in his serpent-carven chair, Nomura regarded the statue grimly, with a deep furrowed frown between his eyes, for he had asked a certain thing of Thassadon, and the fiend, replying through the statue, had refused him. And rebellion was in the heart of Nomura, grown mad with pride, and deeming himself the lord of all sorcerers, and a ruler by his own right among the princes of devildom. So after long pondering, he repeated his request in a bold and haughty voice, like one who addresses an equal rather than the all-formidable suzerain to whom he had sworn a fatal fealty.
I have helped you heretofore in all things,
said the image with stony and sonorous accents that were echoed metallically in the 7 silver lamps.
Yea, the undying words of fire and darkness have come forth like an army at your summons, and the wings of Nethergy have risen to occlude the sun when you called them. But verily, I will not aid you in this vengeance you have planned. For the Emperor Zotella has done me no wrong, and has served me well, though unwittingly. And the people of Xylac, by reason of their turpitudes, are not the least of my terrestrial worshippers. Therefore, Nomura, it were well for you to live in peace with Zotella, and well to forget this olden wrong that was done to the beggar boy Narthos. For the ways of destiny are strange, and the workings of its laws sometimes hidden. And truly, if the hooves of Zotella's palfrey had not spurred you and trodden you under, your life had been otherwise, and the name and renown of Nomura had still slept in oblivion as a dream undreamed. Yea, you would tarry still as a beggar in Yumaos, content with a beggar's guerdon, and would never have fared forth to become the pupil of the wise and learned Euphalac. And I, Thassadon, would have lost the lordiest of all necromancers who have accepted my service and my bond. Think well, Nomura, and ponder these matters, for both of us, it would seem, are indebted to Zotella in all gratitude for the trampling he gave you.
Yea, there is a debt, Nomura growled implacably, and truly, I will pay the debt tomorrow, even as I have planned. There are those who will aid me, those who will answer my summoning in your despite.
It is an ill thing to affront me,
said the image after an interval.
And also, It is not wise to call on those that you designate. However, I perceive clearly that such is your intent. You are proud and stubborn and revengeful. Do then as you will, but blame me not for the outcome.
So, after this, there was a silence in the hall where Nomura sat before the Eidolon, and the flames burned darkly, with changeable colors, in the skull-shapen lamps. And the shadows fled and returned, unresting, on the face of the statue and the face of Nomura. Then, toward midnight, the necromancer arose and went upward by many spiral stairs to a high dome of his house, in which there was a single small round window that looked forth on the constellation. The window was set in the top of the dome, but Nomura had contrived, by means of his magic, that one entering by the last spiral of the stairs would suddenly seem to descend rather than climb, and reaching the last step would peer downward through the window while stars passed under him in a giddying gulf. There, kneeling, Nomura touched a secret spring in the marble, and the circular pane slid back without sound. Then, lying prone on the interior of the dome, with his face over the abyss and his long beard trailing stiffly into space, he whispered a pre-human rune and held speech with certain entities who belonged neither to hell nor the mundane elements, and were more fearsome to invoke than the infernal genie or the devils of earth, air, water, and flame. With them he made his contract, defying Thassadon's will, while the air curled about him with their voices, and rime gathered palely on his sable beard from the cold that was wrought by their breathing as they leaned earthward. Laggard and loth was the awakening of Zotella from his wine, and quickly, ere he opened his eyes, the daylight was poisoned for him by the thought of that invitation which he feared to accept or decline. But he spoke to Obexa, saying,
"Who, after all, is this wizardly dog, that I should obey his summons like a beggar called in from the street by some haughty lord?"
Obexa, a golden-skinned and oblique-eyed girl from Yukaskrag, Isle of the Torturers, eyed the emperor subtly and said,
"O Zotella, it is yours to accept or refuse, as you deem fitting. And truly, it is a small matter for the lord of Yumaos and all Xylac whether to go or to stay, since naught can impugn his sovereignty. Therefore, were it not as well to go?"
For Eubexa, though fearful of the wizard, was curious regarding that devil-builded house of which so little was known. And likewise, in the manner of women, she wished to behold the famed Nomura, whose mien and appearance were still but a far-brought legend in Umaos.
"There is something in what you say," admitted Zotella. "But an emperor, in his conduct, must always consider the public good, and there are matters of state involved which a woman can scarcely be expected to understand.